Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I am your host, Paul Gannon. For the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, we will and you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, the number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. And you can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgan. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgan. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForAgain. And while you're there on Twitter, you can give me a little follow too at GoForAgain. Expected to be joined by the newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the one, the only, Willie Rofe. And Willie's going to be doing 2 hours with us. We're going to bring Willie in for this first hour, and then we're going to bring Willie back for the second hour. So we're going to have a lot of Willie Rofe today, a lot of Hall of Fame talk, a lot of Super Bowl talk, and get Willie's take on the NBA as well, because he's well-versed in the National Basketball Association. And also we're going to bring in Brad Smith, wide receiver for the Buffalo Bills, and we're going to get Brad's take on the Super Bowl, get Brad's take on his season with the Buffalo Bills, and what he looks to do next year in Buffalo. So we got all those good things coming up for you today, so stick around. Should be a lot of fun. And it's been a long time since we said this, and it's been about a month, actually. And Jeremy, how are you today?
You know, I'm here, and, you know, I guess I'll be week to week as the tax season unfolds before us. You know, some of us are out there and their profession calls them away for a couple of months.
And everybody, I guess, does need a little time away. I heard one say from each other, and beautiful song, by the way. So looking back now, and it's been a week since the Super Bowl, and you look at it, in my mind, I had the Patriots winning the Super Bowl. I didn't expect the New York Giants to win the Super Bowl. I'm not surprised that the Giants won the Super Bowl. They're a very good team. I'm obviously not surprised. But, I expected the Patriots to win. I didn't expect Brady and Belichick to lose to Coughlin and Manning again. I thought Brady and he played well. Tom Brady played decently in my mind. He missed a couple big passes there in that particular football game. You hit the pass to Welker, and you probably are talking about the New England Patriots as the Super Bowl champions. But Brady did well in that game, and I did okay. He was okay. He wasn't great, but he was good. And I looked at the Patriots, and I thought, again, that's a game probably they're kicking themselves. If you're a New England Patriots, you're probably kicking yourself right now. Gronkowski was not healthy in that particular football game. He showed it. It was very evident. He wasn't healthy, and he played as such. He was not healthy, and he played like an unhealthy player in that particular football game. Had one catch for 20 yards. And I said this off the air, I wonder if Gronkowski was healthy. That final Hail Mary there was an opportunity to catch that football. You wonder if Gronkowski was 100% if he would have had an opportunity at that ball. You wonder if he was 100% if he would have caught that ball. And you know, Hail Marys are that Hail Marys, and, you know, they're not the easiest thing to complete.
But, Paul, before you get to the Hail Mary, I mean, this is the typical Paul game. This is maybe why, like you said, staying away is a good thing, because I can't even tolerate it. I mean, he would have, first of all, he'd have caught the interception. You got to remember, that was, for Brady, that interception was, I thought, That was almost like a rookie mistake. He should have known better. I mean, Gronkowski really shouldn't even have played, but they had no other option. So I guess they kind of thought, in a way, I thought it was really almost, it was very young of Bill Belichick to think that you're going to be able to fool Tom Coughlin and the New York Giants defense on a guy who's hobbling around out there. And then for Brady to throw that long bomb, you know, which really actually was a bad throw, first of all. It wasn't a great throw. And second of all, you could see, Paul, he couldn't even move on that pass.
Well, I mean, the thing about it, he couldn't move too well. He didn't move well in that particular football game. He did move well, though, in that post-party. He moved very well, actually.
I
was very impressed by those moves. And speaking of being impressed, let's bring in now 11-time Pro Bowler and the newest member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, the one, the only, Willie Roque. Willie, how are you, sir?
How y'all doing? Well, I'm an enshrinee. I'm not a member yet. I'm not a member until I put the yellow jacket on.
You're pretty much in. You're in.
Well, we call enshrinees. And I will say this, it looked like whatever Gronkowski was doing before he went to that party, he should have been doing that before he went and played that football game.
I gotta ask you this though, because it's interesting you say that. Now you heard Rodney Harrison's comments. I mean, how do you feel? Do you like, as a guy who certainly, you know, had success now, a Hall of Famer, what do you think? Was that ridiculous of him to do that?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't be at the, and that's the, it was, I heard, I think it was Robert Kraft's party. It was the owner's party.
What?
And, well, even more incredible was, I mean, I wouldn't think Matt Light, who was a 9-10 year vet, would be out there doing that stuff, too. I mean, with those guys taking the shirts off, I mean, I don't care what the situation is, I'm not going to be at a party jumping around taking my shirt off, you know, when I'm older. I mean, these guys aren't in college anymore. And, you know, Matt Light, you know, he's been in the league about 10 years.
But I got to defend Gronkowski on this. There are not many times in your life where you will be able to go to a Super Bowl. There's not many times in your life where you'll be able to go to a Super Bowl. It was a party. The game is over. I mean, at the end of the day, he's 20, 23 years old. He's a young man. Young men have good times. I don't have a problem with it. I mean, obviously he lost the game, and obviously he should be upset, and he probably was upset. But the reality is, how long do you hold that? I mean, some people are different the way they hold on to things. Some people like to move on quickly and just forget about it. Others like to, you know, be alone and think about it. And this is the way the man likes to, you know, to do things.
If you have a hurt foot and you're hobbling around on the football field and you supposedly were hurt for the game, I don't feel like you should be out there jumping around at a party. I mean, they just... I understand. I differ from you in that aspect. That yes, he's a young man. Yes, he's supposed to have fun. But if you're hurt and you're supposed to not be up to 100%, and you hobble around on the football field, but later on that night when whatever kicked in and you're jumping around, flinging your arms at a party, it doesn't look as good.
And I'll say this, Willie. I'm not saying, I'm not sure if he was drinking, but if he was, alcohol is a hell of a drug. So, I mean, if he was drinking, sometimes, you know, I think some of us have been in that point.
It looked like it was a little more than drinking. But whatever he was doing, he was feeling real good. We'll leave it at that.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
But does this, like, what does this do, I mean, for, like, next season and for that locker room? I mean, in terms of the other players, Brady wasn't even at the party. Belichick wasn't at the party. I mean, they obviously, that was a big loss for them. And here's a guy who's not only at the party, but he's at the party acting like a fool.
I'll say this, Jeremy. I don't think that will affect the locker room more than, you know, what happened outside of that, what happened with Giselle and her comments about the receivers and all that.
Right.
You know, I just think it's a few issues there. I mean, to me, with the dancing and stuff, at that point, does it really matter to him that he lost the Super Bowl? Does he even care? I mean, I know he had a great year. I mean, he had one of the best years in tight end history as far as catching touchdowns. But to me, if I'm outside of looking in, I'm looking at it, I mean, damn, if he's out here playing like this, does he even care? We just lost the biggest game there is in the Super Bowl, and he's jumping around. Now we got the comments about Giselle talking about the players and yeah, that's just going to add fuel to the fire of, you know, what they've always said about Tom Brady. You know, basically she runs him, and they've always said that, you know, on TV and stuff about him and that relationship. So, you know, it is some issues there, and obviously Ocho Cinco probably won't be back, and they're going to have to go get a receiver, and you know, just like Terrell Owens. I mean, I agree with Terrell. Well, we're talking about with Baltimore, I think he could have helped Baltimore. Or helped a team, one of these teams in the playoffs. I think New England has a few issues, but they have the core unit coming back, but they have some issues they have to resolve.
So if Willie Rofe lost the Super Bowl, what will Willie Rofe be doing? And this was a team-sponsored party. This was a team-sponsored party. So if Willie Rofe would have lost the Super Bowl, how is Willie Rofe – what is Willie Rofe doing after the game?
If I lose the Super Bowl and I'm a young guy his age, I might go to a party. It would not be a team-sponsored party. I would do something with some fellas, but it would be maybe dinner, you know, if you have your family with you, I would definitely go to dinner with my family, and maybe I would hang out with some guys, but it would not be a team-sponsored anything that I would go to. But if I'm older, the older Willie Rofe, like Matt Light, I'm probably not going to go out after that.
Well, let me
I understand Matt has a few rings already, so it might not mean as much to him. But if I'm an older guy, then I'm probably not going to go out like that after the game.
Oh, let me ask you this then, Willie. What if Gronkowski, what if he was with a young lady afterwards? And obviously we can't see that, but what if he's with a young lady? What if he's making love after the game instead of partying? What's the difference? I mean, it's still the same thing. I mean, how can you make love after you lose the Super Bowl? I think it's the same thing.
No,
how can you party after you lose the Super Bowl?
No, that's two different parts. If he's making love, he's in his room making love. He's not out there slam dancing with a bunch of dudes with ripping his shirt off.
What's wrong with Paul? Really, you got to remember now, you are about to be in the Hall of Fame. This man will bring you so low. You got to watch
him. I'm not bringing him low, but I'm just using that
low
to make the point. Make the point. What is acceptable behavior after you lose a Super Bowl?
But that's what you just heard from Willie said, and I completely agree with it. I mean, I think his age definitely is a factor. One of the biggest problems I have with what you see with the Super Bowl is, it's a circus. How does a team have a sponsored event after they lose the Super Bowl? One would think they really don't. I mean, you would almost want to let your players, you know, kind of not be involved in that kind of an atmosphere, because then when they do enjoy themselves, in a way, Gronkowski would kind of build up the sale here, because he didn't do anything wrong. If it wasn't the Super Bowl and he had just gone to the Super Bowl to have fun and he went to that party, would anyone even care or even know about this? But the fact is, you know, he acts like a fool. I think Matt Light, and I agree with you, really, almost you got to look at him and say, you're a veteran here. You should have been doing what Tom Brady was doing.
And I'm pretty sure, Jeremy, that Tom Brady and the other veteran-type guys went somewhere with their family. I know Tom Brady went somewhere quiet, was with his family, and probably had a dinner. And if he didn't leave on a private jet or whatever, he wasn't hanging out. So, I mean, that's probably what saying. It's not too small to go to a team. First of all, I agree with Jeremy. The team, Robert Kraft, didn't need to have a party. I mean, if they won, okay, yeah, you need to have a team party. If you don't lose, and then he still has the party. So Robert Kraft or his family, whoever wanted to have that party, I'm pretty sure he didn't care about having a party. Second of all, you're having a team party, and you got somebody dancing around like they just won the Super Bowl. That was hurt for 2 weeks, so it doesn't make the organization look good. On top of the fact that right now everybody's questioning the team and organization because ever since Spygate happened, they haven't won any Super Bowls. So it is, you know, you have a lot of things that are going on and people are talking about until they win another Super Bowl, Belichick will be remembered. It's pre-Spygate and it's post-Spygate. And post-Spygate, he had won.
And that's a fair point, but so you think, looking at that, and I know the perception is out there, and unfortunately in the life that we live in, perception becomes reality. But looking at that, do you think Spygate was the reason that the Patriots won those three Super Bowl titles?
I'm not going to say it's the reason they won the three Super Bowl titles. I will say that it might have something to do with them during the regular season, getting the records and getting the confidence to help them in the postseason. I don't know what was going on. I don't know what they were doing in the postseason. We don't know what they were doing when those teams came and played them in the playoffs. We don't know what they were doing in those postseasons. And if anything was going on where they were filming or doing anything to any of those teams in the home playoff games, then that's totally wrong. You know what I mean? So they had some home playoff games also that they could have done some things there if they were doing it during the regular season.
Go ahead, Terry.
Go ahead, Paul. Well, I was going to say, you know, I looked at this team in the Super Bowl, and certainly they had a good regular season, good playoff run. But to me, do you, looking back on this, if you're the organization, do you agree with the sunsetting, you know, of a Randy Moss, who certainly, I think, that the one thing they lacked all year was someone who, I mean, Wes Welker did well. They have players step up, and they're young. But that's the thing. Hernandez was almost invisible in the Super Bowl. They covered Welker, and I think the Giants really, I thought, did a great job of they can play, it seems like, very well against this offense.
Well, you're right, and I guess they thought that even though Chad didn't do anything, I guess they thought Deion Branch. I mean, he had a big Super Bowl when he got MVP. When they won one of those Super Bowls, and if Deion Branch didn't do as much later on, some of those balls were drops, but some of those balls were bad throws. I mean, the ball Walker was supposed to catch was a tough catch. He threw the ball behind Deion Branch. I mean, yeah, you can say that the receivers dropped a couple balls, but some of those were just bad throws by Tom Brady also. So, I don't know. I mean, they relied on their receivers to move the chains and make a few plays, and they used Gronkowski for the big play. When they got close to the red zone, what they did was they used their receivers to make plays and move the ball down the field, and when they made the big play down by the red zone, most of the time it was Gronkowski. So when you took him out the equation, somebody else was going to have to step up, and that person, it never happened.
And I got to disagree with Jeremy on one point about Hernandez. I mean, Hernandez had a decent game in the Super Bowl.
Oh.
I mean, 8 catches, 67 yards and a touchdown. He had a decent game. He had a decent game in the Super Bowl. I think what the Patriots missed in that Super Bowl was Gronkowski. And not having him at 100% was big, was very big. And also, and to Willie's point, to Willie's point about Brady, Brady missed some throws. He missed some throws in that game, and that was big as well. But go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, I mean, I guess I want to, from your perspective, I looked at this, and I think that anyone say Brady played well, I thought Brady played subpar, sub-Brady certainly. He was mediocre at best, and they knew the Patriots had to know going into this game that they were not going to have Gronkowski, and I thought that their offensive game plan, it almost looked as if they thought that they were going to have him. Because they looked very disheveled. They didn't really – fundamentally, they really were never in sync. They maybe had that one drive where they opened up and they marched right down the field. But they never really seemed to almost get the fact that they were not going to have, you know, one of their stars, if you will, for the entire game.
Well, they were their biggest star, their biggest weapon for the entire game. I mean, Gronkowski was their red zone weapon in the regular season. Like I said, when they got close, or even not even close, I mean, he was catching big passes for a lot of touchdowns for them. And if you're relying on him, I mean, they couldn't have relied on him to have the same productivity as he was going to have. So I don't understand if the guy's not able to practice and he's walking around in a boot for a week and a half, how you think that he's going to have a big impact on the Super Bowl.
And it was obvious that he was really hampered by that ankle. It was very obvious by the way he played. I mean, he was hampered by that ankle, and it hurt that ball club. It really did. It really hurt them. But, I mean, let's be clear about Brady's performance. I thought Brady had a decent performance in that particular football game. And you have to remember this. Tom Brady was playing against a very good Giants defense and a very good Giants front four. That Giants defense is one of the reasons that the Giants are Super Bowl champions right now. They played well throughout these playoffs and into the Super Bowl. They are one of the big reasons the Giants have won this Super Bowl. I mean, Tom Brady threw for almost 300 yards, had two touchdowns, and again, if he makes the one throw to Welker, we're not talking about this. We're talking about Brady and the Patriots. So, I mean, I think Brady had a pretty decent Super Bowl.
Yeah, he had a good Super Bowl, but it wasn't Tom. He did, but outside of him, late in the game, though, he had a decent Super Bowl. But late in the game, he threw the pick early in the fourth.
Right.
And then he misses some balls. So he had a good Super Bowl, but Tom Brady didn't make those mistakes late in the game. And Tom Brady said before the game he was not going to throw a pick. And after the Giants lost from Philly, called them out for the last 2 weeks and talked mess to them all about how they were going to beat them and this and that and whatever, and said Tom Brady had flaws, whatever, they went out there and guaranteed and made a betting and cashed in on it. So, anytime a team can call you out and they can go out there and beat you, it's kind of embarrassing, Paul. I mean, the way the Giants carried themselves, the way they went out there and then they beat them after they did that, it's a little humiliating.
Well, you got to give the Giants had that swagger throughout this whole playoff. I mean, they've had this swagger. You had, Chris Canty predicting the score. You had Antrell Roll talking. I mean, you had everybody talking throughout these playoffs and into the Super Bowl about them, how they were going to win, and they went out and did it. And to your point, I guess, in a lot of ways, they punked the Patriots before, during and after the game in a lot of ways. So,
and now we have Lynn Sanity in New York now. So New York's happy right now. They got that kid Lynn, and I don't know. I'm sorry, I jumped to another subject. I don't know what they're gonna do with Carmelo and Stoudemire, but you know Carmelo does not make anybody better on that basketball team. I mean nobody around him. And this kid Lynn comes in, and you're paying all these guys all this money, and everybody's playing a whole lot better. So it's going to be interesting with the situation in New York, but I know this. If you're a New York fan right now, you're happy about your sports.
Well, let's stop this. Let's stop the madness right now with the Knicks. I mean, Jeremy Lin, yes, is playing some good basketball, but the Knicks are still 12-16. And if the playoffs started today, they would be on the outside looking in. So let's not get too excited about this Jeremy Lin, this New York Knicks stuff. But to your point, it should be very interesting to see what happens when Melo and Stoudemire get back. Because now it's going to limit Lin's touches.
But I also, I mean, it's great to hear about the New York Knicks, and like Paul said, they suck, and this guy isn't going to, he'll fade, you know, in a game or two. I actually would like to hear your thoughts, Willie. I know we're getting, it's the offseason, it's early, but this is a Giants team, though, that there's a lot of decisions that have to be made. I mean, you're now hearing Victor Cruz coming out and saying he's in the last year of a deal, and of course he's getting a lot of publicity, and people are keep going on national circuits saying he'd like a new deal, and he thinks he deserves a new deal, and that Manningham's a free agent. The whole defensive line, you know, could be blown up, and it doesn't look like O.C. Humanura didn't even get into camp on time. So, I mean, do you see, like you were saying, it's going to be interesting for New York, but this could be the end of ultimately their quote-unquote dynasty. They had a good run. They were successful, but this could be a team that could run into a lot of little problems. Jacobs could be gone.
And you know what happens when you win? Other teams are going to come out to some of these players. So you can't tag all the guys. You can't pay all the guys. But Victor Cruz is correct. He had 1,500 yards receiving 80-something balls. I don't know what you're going to do with Mary here, but you got to give Victor Cruz some money. He does deserve a pay rose. Now, we're not talking about – now, I understand DeSean Jackson is a big-game receiver and he makes big plays, but – He ain't put up any catches in 1,500 yards. So what Victor Cruz did last year, he was the main receiver, and he carried the team out there and was made huge play after huge play for that team down the stretch. So they got to pay Victor Cruz, number one. If the kid's making $400,000 and these other receivers are making $10 million. Number two, you're not going to be able to keep everybody, and guys got a ring, so they're going to go out there and get the most money they can now. They got a ring. Some of them have, Yumi Yor got two rings, so these
right.
guys are going to try to, you know, get as much money as they can now, and they got a lot of decisions to make, and it can be a lot different. But the foundation of the New York Giants football team is built on that defensive front and them being able to control, the front seven being able to control the game.
And Willie, I'll play devil's advocate for a second about Victor Cruz. Yes, Victor Cruz deserves to get paid, but he is under contract, and also Victor Cruz has only done it for 1 year. He's only done it for 1 year. So the Giants, in a lot of ways, have all the leverage here. They have all the leverage here. Does he deserve to get paid? Would it be nice for him to get paid? Yes, but they do have the leverage here, and Victor Cruz has only done it for 1 year.
He's got 2 years left on his contract. Add some money on to the next 2 years there. Then instead of paying him $400,000, add a couple million on to it. I mean, I'm not saying you have to redo the contract, but reward the kid for having 1,500 yards, because the numbers he put up are numbers that are all-pro highest paid receiver would put up in the season with that yards and that many receptions. That is what the all pros are supposed to put up. He had an all pro season.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, you know, I definitely would agree with that. And the way Victor Cruz plays is the way I think a lot of people want DeSean Jackson to play. I mean, DeSean Jackson, he's a big time home run hitting type of wide receiver. But Victor Cruz makes those tough catches, those catches over the middle. You haven't seen a lot of DeSean Jackson doing that throughout the course of his career. And not to change subjects on that, but I do think the Eagles should bring DeSean Jackson back anyway because of the dynamic.
Oh, they have to.
Football team. They have to bring him back. But to your point, I do agree. Victor Cruz should get paid, but I can understand if the Giants decide not to pay him. I think
they need to do something to give him something, because the last thing you want is a situation where you have him that's not happy next year. So you have to put some money on that contract on those final 2 years. If you don't give him a new contract, you got to add to those base salaries. You got to put some money on there so the kid feel like he's making, I mean, $400,000, man. Come on. He's making $200 after taxes, and he lives in New York, and he's the toast of the city now. So you have to put some millions on the base salary, so the young man feels like, you know, he's making some money, and he goes out and wants to perform for the team next year. So there's a happy medium there. There's something you reward the kid for. I understand he did it 1 year, but you got to reward him for what he did on the field, because he did have a hell of a year, and he could, and it looks like him and Eli will be having some good chemistry for the next years coming up.
We're talking to the newest enshrinee to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Willie Rolfe. And Willie, speaking of Eli Manning, I mean, the guy has been clutch throughout the course of this year. 15 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, an NFL record. I mean, you name it, he's done it throughout the course of the year. Two times he's been in the Super Bowl. Two times he's led his team on game-winning drives. Eli Manning has played like an elite quarterback this year. He's done it all. How great was Eli Manning throughout the course of this year, Willie?
He was unbelievable. I mean, he had a great year. The team got off to a slow start this year, last year, and as the season progressed, he picked it up, and he's really the one who set the tone and made sure, you know, he came out and performed every week. And he got knocked around some, too. And he's a big tough guy. Your head has to go off to Eli. You know. He's been in New York. He's been there his whole career. He's taken some love since he's been in New York. And for him to go out and for him to come out before the season and say he's an elite quarterback and throw for 4,900 yards with the New York media on his back and to go out there and perform the way he did after he put pressure on himself. I mean, it's unbelievable what he did. Now, let's see what he does for an encore next year, because I think he was upset because last year, I think this year on the top 100 list of current players, I don't know where they had him ranked, Paul. You might have him ranked.
He wasn't ranked at all. He wasn't ranked.
He wasn't even ranked at all, and I think that pissed him off. So when he saw that he wasn't even ranked in the top 100 players, and he, the quarterback for New York, just got a Super Bowl ring, and he had a tough year last year, I think that put fire in his belly for y'all to say, hold on, you're not even going to rank me at all, and I got a ring, and I'm the quarterback for the Giants, and you're going to say I'm not even in the top 100 players? And I think that lit a fire in him, and I think Victor Cruz and him both belong in the top 20 this year.
And they definitely played like it. Victor Cruz, Eli Manning, those guys really balled this year. They really got it done throughout the course of this year. You got to give those guys a lot of credit and give the New York Giants a lot of credit. And moving forward now, Willie, with Eli Manning, and I want to compare him now to his brother, Peyton, and looking at Eli and looking at Peyton. Last drive, and we talked about it this week, and I'm going to ask one more time because last, if you had one player last drive, which quarterback would you go with, Eli or Peyton?
Are we talking about regular season or postseason?
Let's say postseason.
Oh, man, you're making it tough, aren't you? Because of what he did in the big games and what he's done in the playoffs for what he's done compared to the other quarterback, I mean, obviously you have to say Eli. You can't argue what Eli is able to do and the way he played in the big game and the way he played in this Super Bowl and the way he played in the Super Bowl 2007. You got to say Eli.
I agree. You can't really argue that. I don't think. I mean,
look at the numbers.
Exactly. Numbers speak for themselves. And Eli, what, 8-3 in the postseason? Peyton, 9-10. So Peyton Manning is under .500 in the postseason. And Eli Manning has won most of his games on the road. So you got to give even more credit to him. And I want to ask this, Willie. I mean, you were at the game. You were there firsthand. You saw everything. When the Giants got the ball back, did you think they were going to score there the final 3 minutes of the game? Did you think they were going to score?
Yeah, I thought they were going to score. I thought Eli and the offense, I thought they were scoring. Yes, I did. After Walker dropped that ball, it just took the energy out of it. It seemed like after he dropped that ball, it just took the life out of New England. I mean, it looked like to me that they kind of figured they were going to get beat.
Well, let me ask you this, Willie. Did you think, with a minute to go, did you think that New England was going to score, or you thought the game was over?
No, I thought the game was over. I mean, I thought they could have ran a little more clock off of there, and I thought the game was over because what they had one tight end and Tom Coughlin had challenged a call that they said that you saw was. Everybody saw that was a catch, and you challenge it, you lose the timeout, even though you got the golden boy. You got one timeout, you got to draw the length of the field with a minute. Nah, I didn't think he could do it. And you got to score a touchdown. And you can't kick a field goal. That was the difference in the game. You got to score a touchdown, you can't kick a field goal, you only have one timeout. I mean, it's very tough task.
And that, I agree. I mean, it was a tough, that would have been a hard thing to do, to score a touchdown, to your point. I mean, if it was a field goal, you would feel a little better about it, but they had to get a touchdown. And that was big. And to that, I guess you look at it, one of the biggest plays of that game now becomes the safety early on in the first quarter. That safety looms large now. And looking back,
so technically what they call was he was getting hit if he threw the ball, but he threw the ball to an area where there wasn't a receiver. Is that why it was a safety?
That's why it was a safety, yeah. There was nobody in there, plus he was in the end zone. So,
you know what? That's a tough call because I haven't seen that many calls made like that.
And when I saw it, I wasn't thinking safety. I was thinking the ball was thrown away. And
granted,
I didn't see anybody near the pass. But when they said safety, when they said intentional grounding, then I guess it all made sense. But that was a big play. It loomed very large.
That was
in
a huge
particular
play.
Football game.
And then also a
play a lot of people are talking about is Ahmad Bradshaw scoring that touchdown there with 57 seconds left, where the Patriots basically let him score. I think Bradshaw did the right thing because he was uncertain of what to do. You could tell by the way he rolled into the end zone. He was uncertain of what to do.
The same thing,
you make mistakes.
Green Bay did with letting Terrell Davis score in the Super Bowl. Remember back in '96?
It was the same deal.
So what do you think? You think he should have tried to not score for another second? What's supposed to do, just stand there?
Well, they wanted him to take a knee or drop at the one-yard line. So then at that point, the Patriots, I think they had one timeout at that point. And if he stops at the one-yard line, the clock will run, and I believe the time would be like 18 seconds.
Yeah, but they
still
had to score a touchdown, right?
They would have to kick a field goal. If they kicked the field goal, they would have been okay.
Oh, okay. If you take a timeout and they kick the field goal, then okay, I got you.
They kick the field goal, they're okay.
Right.
So I look at it as with Bradshaw in that situation, if you're uncertain, you're better off just scoring because, again, you make a mistake. Well, when you're uncertain, sometimes you make mistakes, and he could have made a big mistake at that point, a fumble or something. So in my mind, it was best for him to score. Best for him to score in that situation.
I always think that to sit there and try to run the clock out, if you're going to do that, there's nothing wrong with it. I think that when you got to the point of falling down on the one, though, you're there, you're in the end zone, and I think when you sit it and take a knee, and then there's a fumble or something, you know, then that becomes something that you never forget. So, to me, you walk in and you don't regret it. And I felt that their defense was playing so well. You know, I would have wanted to see their defense on the field against the Patriot offense.
So you would like to see the Patriots offense on the field against the Giants defense if you're the Giants?
If I was the Giants, like, so much was made about the fact that, you know, he went into the end zone. If I'm the Giants, scoring wasn't such a bad thing. Their defense was, especially in the fourth quarter, was really playing very well, very aggressive against the Patriots. So, and with only a minute, less than a minute to go, I mean, they're rushing four or five people the whole game, Paul. And they were, I mean, they put tremendous pressure on Brady. And with only a minute to go, you know, how dangerous was this offense that looked? I thought they were anemic. I really felt that the so much was made of the Patriots, and maybe it is a testament to Gronkowski and Hernandez how well. And I know Willie had pointed out it's true in the red zone. You know, they really did focus on those two giant tight ends that were mammoth targets that were almost undefendable in small areas. That, you know, they came up small, and the Giants' defense seemed to own and be able to know and predict, especially in passing situations, how to get to Brady and how to get to Brady fast.
Well, they did a good job against Tom Brady. I mean, in a lot of ways, they did some of the things that they did last time they played Brady in the Super Bowl.
They didn't hit him as much as they did last Super Bowl, did they?
They didn't hit him as much, but they got pressure on him. They got pressure on him throughout this game.
And what you're saying, they didn't have to blitz more than five. Well, if they were only rushing four and five, like you said, they didn't have to blitz too many and lose that much out of the secondary then. They didn't have to, you know, blitz six, seven.
I mean, they got eight quarterback hits on Brady, and they sacked him twice.
But also say this, Paul. I mean, that first play of the Patriots from scrimmage, I mean, that wasn't a mistake from the Giants' standpoint, from the defensive, you know, aspect of the ball. They were coming. They were pressing hard to get to Brady. And I mean, I don't think they were thinking, let's get a safety here. I mean, certainly maybe a sack or get to him very early. But they did. They got to him, and that was a bad, a very ill-advised play by Brady. He should have known better.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people didn't think it was a safety. I didn't think it was a safety. Willie did not think it was a safety. I mean, it just was one of those plays, I think. And, again, it was a big play. Obviously, it was a big play and had a bearing on the football game, a big bearing on the football game. And, ultimately, it helped the New York Giants win the Super Bowl. Willie, we're going to bring you back now in the second hour. We're going to give you a break, bring you back in the second hour. We're going to talk some Hall of Fame, and we're going to get your thoughts on some NBA news as well.
Okay, then.
All right. Everybody, stick around for the second hour. We're going to bring Willie Rowe back. We're going to talk Hall of Fame with him, and we're going to get his thoughts on the NBA. Willie's a big-time NBA fan, so we're going to get his thoughts on that as well. And I mean, the Super Bowl was a good game. It was a very good football game, and you can't ask for a better football game on that stage. That was a big game. It was a good game, and give a lot of credit to the New York Giants for winning that Super Bowl. I mean, they did it the hard way. They did it the hard way when they won it back in 2007 season, I should say, and they did it the hard way this year. They did it the hard way. And I remember Eli Manning this week talking about doing it the hard way during their parade. He talked about how they did it the hard way throughout the course of this season. And they did it the hard way in the Super Bowl. They did it the hard way throughout this whole run. So you look at this whole situation with the New York Giants, they did it the hard way. They did it the hard way, and give them credit for doing it the hard way. Because I thought the Giants would lose to the Falcons. Then I thought the Giants would lose to the Packers. And then I thought the Giants would lose to the 49ers. And ultimately, as the Giants made their way to Indy and to the Super Bowl, I thought they would lose to the New England Patriots. So,
well,
I mean, I thought, and I was a four-time loser here when it came to predicting the Giants in the playoffs. But I look at the Giants season, I point to one play against the New York Jets. They're backed up. They're down 7-3. Eli Manning goes back, hits Victor Cruz. Victor Cruz puts a move on Antonio Cromartie. He's in the open. 99 yards later, the Giants score. The Giants are up 10-7. They're backed up. If that play doesn't happen, and I truly, truly believe this, if that play does not happen, if Victor Cruz does not score that 99-yard touchdown against the New York Jets with his team down 7-3, all the momentum with the New York Jets at this point, all the momentum with the New York Jets at this point in that particular ball game. If he does not score there, I don't think the Giants would be here. I don't think we would be talking about the Giants as Super Bowl champions.
Well,
that was the biggest play of the season, I believe, for the New York Giants. They were on the ropes, coming off a bad loss against the Redskins. They're 7-7 at that point. 7-7 at that point. They were not playing well at that point in that particular ball game. But Victor Cruz rescued the New York Giants in that particular ball game. And he's rescued the Giants throughout the course of this season. But he rescued them in that game. That, to me, that was the signature play. That was the biggest play to me for the New York Giants. If it doesn't happen, we're not talking about Eli and the Giants being Super Bowl champions.
I guess the one thing, the fact that they lost, you know, they had that streak. I will say this, Paul. When you look at the team during the playoffs, it's like, you know, and it was almost the mirror image of where they were when they won the last Super Bowl. They certainly have kind of split personalities where they're certainly able to – they become another team almost. I mean, they manhandled the Packers. And when I say that, I don't think – there were a few teams, you know, this NFL season who could say that at any point, you know, during the season or even in a quarter on a drive – even maybe even on a drive against the Packers. The Packers were lighting it up. And I think even in the Super Bowl, the Giants – it's almost in a way they're able to find themselves at the right time, at the right moment. Their defense has, for whatever the reason, it matches up. It seems to match up very well. It matched up against the Eagles quite well. It matches up against, you know, offensive line and certainly quarterbacks who are mobile. You know, because if you look at Aaron Rodgers, he's a somewhat mobile guy. Eli's not, you know, Michael Vick, so to speak, but he can move around. But they're able to collapse that pocket so fast. You know, they were showing all last week, it's 3-4 seconds that you get.
And you're right. I mean, you don't get a lot of time to make the plays and do what you have to do. And as a quarterback, you got to think fast. And Eli Manning and the New York Giants thought fast and real quick throughout the course of this NFL season. Let's bring in now wide receiver for the Buffalo Bills, Brad Smith. Brad, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
No problem.
And, Brad, you played both of these teams. You played the Giants and you played the Patriots. I want to start with Super Bowl 46. Looking back on it, did you think the Giants could make the type of run that they did?
I mean, with them, you never know. I guess both their Super Bowls, they kind of shocked a lot of people. So playing them, you kind of got a feeling that, you know, their defense was good enough, and, you know, offensively they were explosive. So it's something you definitely couldn't put past.
Right. And you look at going into this game, Brad, who'd you have winning?
I had them both losing. I had them tying. No, we're not playing anything, you know. But I kind of had the Giants just because of the balance, you know, running. They can run it when they need to, and of course they can throw it. And then defensively, you know, they're as good as defense there is in the league. So, you know, that's why I had them.
And looking at this game, Brad, I got to ask, and you're an expert, you're a wide receiver in this league. I got to ask, how catchable was that Welker play in the fourth quarter in the Super Bowl? How catchable was that ball?
I mean, it's a catchable ball, and I'm sure West would say the same thing. It hit his hand, but at the same time, when you're running a vertical route at full speed and you're turning, trying to catch a ball that's behind you, it's not the easiest catch in the world, but it is catchable. And you know, I'm sure he can make that a bunch of other times, but you know, it's definitely not easy.
Right. And in contrast, how great of a catch was Manningham's catch there?
Oh man, that was unbelievable. During the game, I wasn't sure if he caught it or not, if he got his feet in, but, you know, even if he didn't get his feet in, it was still an unbelievable catch. And the throw has been underrated, too, to throw it into a cover two defense with the corner running underneath and the safety right on top is, you know, that was one of the best throws I've ever seen.
We're talking to Buffalo Bills wide receiver Brad Smith. And, Brad, let's look at the Buffalo Bills season. You guys got off to a great start. You were hit pretty hard by injuries throughout the course of this season. Other than the injuries, what kind of happened to you guys in that second half of the season?
Well, you know, you hit that right on the head. And then, you know, we just striving for consistency is another thing. You know, when you got guys who, you know, haven't been playing with each other very long and kind of didn't have that comfort level, and it was kind of tough to try to get on a roll. I think, you know, we did it on and off throughout the year, but I think going into next year, we get everybody back healthy and the guys who are able to play, gain some experience, it's going to help us big time.
And, Brad, this offseason, the Bills, they brought in the innovator of the Wildcat offense in the NFL, David Lee, as the quarterback coach. Of course, you got Chan Gailey there, who was with Cordell Stewart in Pittsburgh. He was the man behind slashing. Throughout the course of the season, injuries was a big reason why you didn't get as many touches in the Wildcat offense as you got earlier in the year. Going into 2012, do you expect to get more touches in the Wildcat offense?
Oh, man, I don't know how it's going to come, but I'll take anything. If it's Wildcat or catching it, throwing it, it doesn't really matter to me. Just as a competitor, you know, when you're able to make plays and however that comes, I think it's a good thing to have Coach Lee there, guy who's ran it successfully, and I think in bringing that knowledge to us can only help. We have a lot of guys back there with Freddie and CJ and Stevie. Hopefully he comes back. We can do some real good things out of it.
And, Brad, you look at the success of Tim Tebow in Denver. The offense was kind of tailored to his skill set. I look at you at Missouri. You were a very good college quarterback. Do you wonder sometimes if you were given a similar opportunity where offense was tailored to your skill set, where you could have been successful as a full-time quarterback in this league?
I mean, I could say what if, you know, a million times. But, you know, I believe in my ability to, you know, play a position. I think, you know, I'm happy for Tim that, you know, he got the opportunity to show, you know, what he can do. And, you know, you don't have to be a 6 foot size, you know, stand in the pocket, not move quarterback. You can do a lot of things, you know, with your feet, keep plays alive and running it. And as long as you find a way to win, that's what matters. So, I mean, I definitely think I, you know, can do some good things, you know, behind center. But, you know, hopefully guys in the future have more of an opportunity.
Right. And looking at you now, Brad, I mean, you made the adjustment. You went from New York City to Western New York City and Buffalo. How much different was Buffalo than New York City?
Well, it's the second largest city in New York, so, you know, we're doing pretty good. It's different, man. Just the whole, you know, the whole vibe. You know, New York City is, you know, doesn't sleep. It's, you know, it's always something going on, always a lot of hype. You know, you come to Buffalo, you know, it's not as much going on. But when it's Sunday comes, everybody's a Bills fan. You know, there's no other teams in town, so you got everybody coming to the game. After the game, you know, everybody's hanging around. And it just makes it feel like a family, like a college town, so I can appreciate that.
We're talking to Buffalo Bills wide receiver Brad Smith. And, Brad, speaking of New York and the New York Jets, they seem to be a team in turmoil this year. You spent many years in that locker room, and you also played the Jets twice this year with the Buffalo Bills. Did you notice anything different about that particular ball club this year?
You know, Uncle only can speak from, you know, my experience. I don't really know what went on this year. But, you know, it's always been a tight-knit group of guys, guys who kind of cared about each other and, you know, played hard. So, you know, once, you know, things don't go the way you expected, you kind of – things start coming out and you lose some games and, you know, that happens everywhere. So, you know, I don't think it's nothing new, but being in New York, it gets kind of hyped up. So, you know, as football-wise, you know, they're talented enough to win, you know, just like a lot of teams in this league. So, you know, it's always something else. It's always about, you know, how your team gels together, your chemistry, the character, and, you know, can you make the plays to win?
Right. And this year, for whatever reason, they did not make the plays to win, and you always expect the Jets. When I see the Jets every year, they always go through that point where they struggle a little bit, and then the end of the year, they always make that run for whatever reason. They did
right.
not make that run this year, and who knows what it is, but it didn't happen for the Jets this year. And Brad, now, going into this offseason, what do you feel like you need to work on to get better in 2012?
I'm just excited, you know, just to be, you know, in Buffalo, staying in the offseason, working out, just to get to know the people more. I've told somebody I'm still learning everybody's names in the whole building, where everything is, and, you know, I'm still learning that. So I'm going to get that done first, and then, you know, just getting more locked in on the playbook, getting the finer details and on the football field. And I'm going to keep working on my footwork at quarterback and throwing the ball and at wide receiver. You know, getting in and out of your braces is the biggest thing, and of course, catching the football. So, all those things that I'll be working on, and I can't think of anything I won't be working on. So, I'm just excited.
And I look at you, and you talked about you like to get touches, whether it's wide receiver, quarterback, kick return, or what have you. But is there a personal favorite for you?
I mean, I've been a quarterback my whole life. Well, my first year playing, I was a guard. In Little League football. So I can't say my whole life. But other than that, yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, you get the hands on the ball, and, you know, you're in the control of the whole offense. You know, at wide receiver, you're kind of at the mercy of the quarterback. So, man, I like being that guy.
And, Brad, you're a busy man in the community with your True Foundation. Tell us a little bit about this foundation and what it does.
Well, it's a community-based foundation. It's in Youngstown, Ohio. We focus on helping young children, you know, even up to high school age, just giving them a foundation of character, of education, and helping them focus on things, you know, that they don't normally get to see. We bring people, other NFL athletes, other business people into the community and, you know, sit them down, talk to them, just to give them a broader view of what they can be in life. And being from the inner city in Youngstown, you don't really get to see that too much. So that's what we try to do. We try to raise money we help youth football teams buy equipment, jerseys, help with after-school programs, anything we can do to help these kids out.
And I look at your website and I see a quote there, character and personal force are the only investments worth anything. Tell us about that quote and what that means to you.
Well, I mean, just the first part of it is, you know, is everything. Your character is going to last longer, you know, than any Super Bowl you might win, as great as it is, or any accomplishment, as much money as you might make. But if you don't have the character to back it up, it's not going to be worth it. So that in itself made the whole that quote to me. And then the personal force is not willing to let anybody stop you from doing what you desire to do. And you put those two together, your character and the will to get the job done, you know, you're going to be a pretty successful person.
And where can we find information about the True Foundation and some of its events coming up?
Oh, absolutely. You can go to truefoundation16.org. Go on there. We'll keep it updated with, you know, all the events, all the fundraising things we got going. And, you know, we're just going to keep building.
And, Brad, Twitter, I see you on Twitter. Give us your Twitter handle.
Absolutely. It's @RealBradSmith. And I'm the only person that tweets on there, so, you know, it'll be me.
So, fans, connect with this man, Real Brad Smith, and also donate to his foundation. TrueFoundation16.org is where you can find it. So make sure you sign on there and look at some of the great things that Brad Smith is doing in the community. Brad, it was a pleasure talking to you, man. We wish you nothing but the best of luck going into 2012. And as always, let's do this again.
Absolutely. I had a great time, man. I appreciate you guys.
Appreciate it. Brad Smith, wide receiver for the Buffalo Bills. And Brad is doing work in the community, doing work on the field, and that's, you got to give him a lot of credit for that. Give him a lot of credit for some of the things he's doing in the community. He's getting it done, and you got to applaud the effort. Getting it done in the community, getting it done on the field, Brad Smith. And I wondered about that, Brad Smith, in terms of being a quarterback, and he talked about it, you know, guys getting now that opportunity, like a Tebow. I mean, Tim Tebow really did not play like an NFL quarterback throughout the course of this year. He had an offense that was tailor-made to his skill set. Even though the offense was tailor-made to his skill set, you look at Tim Tebow's numbers, they're not eye-popping. You look at some of the things he's done, obviously the comebacks are big. Obviously the playoff victory against the Pittsburgh Steelers was big, but it's nothing that you're saying wow about. And so you wonder, Brad Smith, a guy who put up some big numbers, was even a Heisman candidate during one of those years during his college career. You wonder if Brad Smith, given the opportunity to be an NFL quarterback, you wonder whether or not he could have done like Tebow, if not better. You wonder that sometimes. And I mean, Tim Tebow, he was given an opportunity, a very good opportunity, a very big opportunity to do what he did. He was given an opportunity there in Denver, and let's be honest, he did well, but the defense did better, and that was one of the reasons why the Broncos made the playoffs. Go ahead, Jeremy.
I mean, first of all, you keep using this term opportunity. I mean, let's be honest, Paul. There was no expectation. In fact, really, this wasn't an opportunity as much as This is an organization who was really getting ready to clean house. They fired the coach who drafted the player, or they fired the coach who obviously was part and parcel to having this guy. And ultimately, he was a fan favorite. I mean, the problem with Tim Tebow, I guess, from that organization's standpoint, why they had to do this is he's a good guy. I mean, he has this great persona, and it doesn't he comes from a big name college. He had a great career, so people probably wanted to check him off the list. Paul, I mean, you're not going to make this argument. I hope you at least were fair enough to say he's a horrible quarterback. I mean, the fact that he could be considered an NFL caliber quarterback with those stats, I mean, if not since the days of a Doug Peterson or a Rodney Peete, have I looked at an organization and say, how can you win like that? I mean, it was amazing to watch, and it was a little bit insulting. And now, I mean, to go into this season, to me, if you're the Broncos, unless this guy can change his throwing mechanics, to think this is going to turn out well when every NFL team has every game that he's played in on film, there's no way he will make an NFL season.
And next year is going to be big when it comes to Tebow. Next year is going to be big. And I'm interested to see, now that we have a year of film on him, does he progress? Does he get better? I mean, I'm at this point who still questions whether or not Tebow is an NFL quarterback. But I will say this. He has earned this opportunity for another chance. He's earned an opportunity for another chance. I will say that. And I will say this. He did win a playoff game. And he has as many playoff wins as Tony Romo. So, and obviously Tony Romo is a lot better quarterback than Tim Tebow. But I'm making that point to say this. Tim Tebow deserves an opportunity to see what he can do and see what he really is. I don't think he's an NFL quarterback. I think the Denver Broncos need to look at somebody, maybe a veteran they can bring in that could on some level push him and also could, if necessary, step in for him. I mean, Tim Tebow, I mean, when you have some games where he was, 2 for 8, and other games, 9 for 22, you saw some 6 for 22s and some crazy numbers that you would never think you would see from an NFL quarterback. And also, you look at Tim Tebow, the man did not complete 50% of his passes. He did not complete 50% of his passes. That's unheard of for a starting quarterback in the National Football League to be below 50%.
I mean, this is my point. You're sitting here saying if you're NFL teams, I think Tim Tebow, I think a lot of executives around the league have to be lucky or thinking, wow, I'm really glad we didn't draft this guy. Because, ultimately, the Broncos should have tried to find another position for him rather than keeping him at quarterback. And that was Josh McDaniels pretty predominantly, or obviously you could see that. I mean, I feel bad because I ultimately you really feel bad for the organization and the player Tim Tebow. He's a great athlete, but he's a horrible quarterback. I mean, a horrible. Unless they're going to
I would agree with you on that. I would agree with you on that in terms of the way he's played. I'm not completely sold, but I will say this: he does deserve another opportunity to go into training camp as the starting quarterback and to start the season as the starter. He's earned that right. And I think that victory against the Pittsburgh Steelers in the playoffs, 10 for 21, 316 yards, granted, he only completed 10 passes, but they were 10 big passes, but it was only 10 passes. But I think you have to give him credit and you have to give him an opportunity for next year. I agree with you. I am not sold on this guy as a starting quarterback in the National Football League. I am not sold. But I have to – I think we all have to acknowledge that he deserves a full season. He's earned that. I mean, you don't deserve anything in life. Let's be clear about that. But he has earned – that. He's earned that.
You're not going to sit there. So you – That is why I have to step back and take months at a time, you know, to separate myself, to maybe feel some form of emotion to miss you. But then I come back and I realize I don't miss you.
But let me
end
on.
How can you let me talk, tough guy? How do you say on one hand, tough guy, he's a horrible quarterback and you don't deserve anything in life, but he deserves an opportunity to start when he's a horrible quarterback and you don't deserve anything in life?
Well, okay, can I tell you why? You don't deserve, but he did earn. So earning is a little different. No one deserves anything, but he earned it by his play. And let's look at the Broncos. Before Tim Tebow, they were 1-4. 1-4 and left 4 dead.
Okay.
And I think anybody would say if they thought the Broncos would be in the playoffs at 1-4, I would tell you you were crazy. I would tell you, you need to be in some kind of mental institute, some kind of mental ward. You need help. You need some kind of help if you thought the Broncos would get into the playoffs after being 1-4, left for dead, playing some horrible, bad football. But I will say this. Tim Tebow stepped in, and he changed the culture. Somehow, some way, the defense started playing better. Somehow, some way, magic just started to happen. He pulled a rabbit out of a hat against the Denver Broncos, not the Broncos, against the Miami Dolphins there. The team was left for dead in that particular football game. They got an onside kick in that game, and they were able to win that game. I mean, they got their kicker, Matt Prater, who made a 59-yard field goal to get them into overtime in one game they had. And so, I mean, it was a lot of crazy stuff with Tim Tebow. This was a guy who completed only 2 passes in one game against the Kansas City Chiefs, and somehow, some way, the Denver Broncos won that particular football game. And when they needed a play in that game, he hit Aaron Decker with a big bomb in that particular game. Again, I still question whether or not he is a starting quarterback in this league. But one thing I don't think we can question is whether or not he deserves, or excuse me, earned an opportunity to play as the starting quarterback next season. He has earned that opportunity.
Hate him or love him.
He's earned that opportunity.
Can I ask you a question? If you're a real general manager and you really want to win a championship and you're a real general manager of a real NFL franchise and he was your returning starter, you are really trying to sell me on the fact that this guy, because he played, because the team won, because the team bought into his BS propaganda, and the team won. How is this player, if he comes into camp with the same mechanics, Paul, who you just said he went two passes in a 4-quarter game? How can you sit here and tell me, Paul, this guy should be the foundation, the most important position in football, arguably in sports, the quarterback of an NFL franchise who wants to win a Super Bowl?
And what's that? When you complete 2 passes in a 4-quarter game, that's what, 0.5 completions 0.25, per quarter?
0.5, I'm sorry, right.
0.5, because like I said initially, 0.5 completions per quarter. Yes, I agree with you. I mean, I can't really argue some of the points that you make, but you can't argue this. This team was left for dead. They were at death's door. They were knocking at death's door. Death didn't let them in yet. Death would not let them in because Tim Tebow rescued them. He rescued the ball club. He came out of nowhere. He put on his Superman cape. He brought his Bible, and he started to play big-time football. Well, not big-time football, but good enough football. And for some reason, somehow, some way, the defense started playing better. Somehow, some way, these crazy things started to happen. It's inexplicable. You cannot explain it. There's no explanation for it. You can't really explain what happened. But I think you got to tip the cap to Tim Tebow and what he has done for the Denver Broncos. He is one of the big reasons with the defense. And you could argue that it was more so the defense than him. But give him credit. Hate him, love him, give him credit. Give him credit. He's earned the right to be a starting quarterback for the Denver Broncos next season. He's earned it. He's earned it. And I don't think we can argue that.
Well, I'm going to say this, Paul, and I mean this. You know, I am arguing it, and I hate to be the – I think the problem is I keep going back to from an organization. See, and that's, I guess, the fundamental difference between you and I. You're not you don't look at things from a goal-oriented perspective, from really unemotional. You're being emotional. You're being what you are, which is a feminine. You know, you laugh at stupid jokes. And you're not thinking right. Here, if you want to win, Paul, you are telling, again, you're a general manager. You're a team owner. This is the quarterback that's going to raise the Lombardi Trophy. Where how, Paul, unless the NFL somehow changes the rule to say that you can only throw the ball three times per quarter, well, then maybe this guy would lead the league in passer rating efficiency. But otherwise, I mean, the teams now are going to lock on him. Just like every NFL team, you know, does when they get a chance to make adjustments. It's hard to make adjustments when certainly the Broncos, to their credit, run the ball successfully, and Tim Tebow can add to that. But in a realistic fashion, Paul, being honest, looking at it again from an honest, like, perspective, how can they succeed when this is a guy who can, and he has receivers around him. I mean, you'll agree, Paul. This is a team that does actually have some talented receivers.
Well, no, you're not going to call Aaron Decker, Demaryius Thomas. You're not going to call those guys talented receivers. He didn't have a lot of weapons in terms of wide receivers. Tebow didn't have a lot of weapons. He didn't have a lot of weapons. I mean, Demaryius Thomas played some decent football. Aaron Decker played some decent football. But you got to remember, the Denver Broncos did get rid of Brandon Lloyd, who was their number one wide receiver. They did trade him to St. Louis during the year. So, I mean, yes, he needs more weapons. I think he needs more weapons around him. But I would agree with you. I will say I'm not completely sold. I will say, and I will hammer that point, I am not completely sold on Tim Tebow. I'm not sold. It's going to take a lot for me to be sold on this guy, a whole heck of a lot for me to be sold on this guy. But you cannot. I don't think any of us can argue that he's earned that right to play, to go into camp, mini camp, OTAs, all that good stuff, go into the regular season as the starting quarterback. No one can truly argue that, I don't think.
Here's my question, Paul, and I mean this. You want to me, to say that, is it wrong to wonder at this point, and I keep going back to, I mean, Cordell Stewart actually had a longer career as a quarterback than he did as a receiver. But I mean, this is a guy who's 6'3". I mean, a solid 230. You could put him at a linebacker, strong safety position. I mean,
you're talking about Tebow.
Yeah, Tim Tebow is not. I think sometimes people who just, you know, casually or cavalierly look at this guy, they may not realize, I mean, he is a monster of an NFL athlete. But he's not, he is right now so fundamentally far gone from being a real NFL quarterback. To me, you can't just sit here, unless some kind of magic happens to him over one offseason. If he comes in, I will say this, even if they were to lose and go, you know, 3-13 or 6-10, but he can show you he can throw the ball, then that's something that would be a miracle. Because as it stands now, Paul, I just believe most NFL defenses will welcome seeing them next year, because it is really defending against the run. As I told you the last time I was on the show, I don't fault the Steelers for doing what they did. They showed the most arrogance a defense, I think, in 20 or 30 years ever showed, you know, an opponent, which was the first play from scrimmage in overtime. They put 11 men at the line of scrimmage. There was not one man 5 yards off that ball, and that was predominantly because they truly had no respect at all for Tim Tebow. And to me, Paul, it wasn't a great throw. I mean, it was.
It was. No. I got to stop you here. Right. That was a good throw. That was a good throw. It was on the money, in stride. That was a good throw. And to your point about the Steelers and everything, we had Ryan Mundy from the Pittsburgh Steelers on the show a couple weeks back. And Ryan talked about how, to your point, well, he talked about how in that game, they had ran the ball on first down 21 out of 22 times or something like that, some kind of crazy number. So to your point, I mean, they had the box stacked, obviously. But Tim Tebow made the play when he had to make the play. And speaking of a guy who's made a lot of plays throughout the course of his career, the newest enshrinee into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, let's bring him back in now, Willie Rofe. Welcome back.
I'm back.
and Willie, let's get right down to it. You got your name called last Saturday. As you sit there right now, how does it feel to be a Hall of Famer?
It feels wonderful. You know, anytime you achieve something at a certain level in your line of work, what I decided to do for a long period of my life, and to be in a steep group where it's only 200, you know, with our class, I think I might be number 272. I mean, that speaks volumes of how many guys have come through the league and played, you know, since the merger and way before, and it's only 270 guys that can say they're in that group. So it's unbelievable.
And I can imagine. I mean, and looking at it, first of all, where did you watch the announcement?
Well, actually, I had gone to the gym and did some cardio to get. You know, I was anxious and I was. You know, kind of nervous, so I decided to go to the gym about 2 o'clock, 1:30, 2 o'clock, and did some cardio. And I was leaving the gym, and my agent Lamont Smith called me and said he talked to a reporter in Indy, and he had good, you know, good recollection that he thought I had gotten in, but he couldn't say it for sure, and he thought Jerome didn't get in, and he was in Vegas with Jerome at the time, Jerome Bettis. And I said, "Are you sure, Lamont?" And he said, "No, I can't say I'm sure, but it's a reliable source." So I got back home about 2:45, and that's when the show was on. And then they went down to the final seven, but then they said, "Well, all these guys might not be in." So I think it was about 3 o'clock when they finally said that the guys that had gotten in.
And when you heard the announcement, what was going through your mind? I mean, were you speechless? Were you? Did your heart drop? I mean, what happened?
I was just, I couldn't believe it, and I was just speechless, and I was actually packing because my flight kicked in. If I made the Hall of Fame, the Hall of Fame committee puts this together, not the NFL. So I was rushing because I had a 4:25 flight to get to Indy Sunday morning at 1 o'clock in the morning. So I was rushing, trying to get to the airport to catch my flight at the time. So I really didn't have a lot of time to really grasp it because I was in such a hurry trying to catch a flight.
And I mean, it was obviously, and I was watching the show, and I know they interviewed everybody and they didn't interview you. What happened there?
But you know what? My phone was ringing so much, and I didn't already, I guess those guys were already set up to talk to them and were situated, and I didn't really have time. And if they called my phone to even try to talk to me, I was rushing trying to get to the airport. So I don't think any of them were in a hurry. I know Chris Dolman lives in Atlanta. I think he drove over because he was driving back after we got done Tuesday. So, I don't know, Cortez had a private plane bring him from Orlando. So I just think the way my ticket was set up, I was having to get to the airport.
We're talking to the newest enshrinee into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Willie Rofe. And you went to Indy. you're in Indy now. You're in the Hall of Fame, and you get to Indy. Talk about the atmosphere being in Indy and being a Hall of Famer. I mean, how was that for you?
Oh, it was great. Well, I mean, I got in at 1 o'clock on Sunday morning. So, I mean, Saturday night, like Sunday morning. By the time I got to the hotel room and laid around, I didn't get up till Sunday for the game. We had to be downstairs at 3 o'clock. So walking through the stadium and walking around with, you know, and sitting around with the guys before the game, you know, you have a lot of fans in the stadium that want to take pictures and just congratulating us. And after the game, man, I was so tired from the traveling that when by the time I got back to the room, I was out. So I didn't really hang out after the game. And, you know, Monday, pretty after the Super Bowl, and the next day, pretty much, you know, everybody, you know, it's cleared out on Monday. So I didn't really get a chance to enjoy, you know, hanging out with a lot of people because I didn't really, Sunday night after the football game, I was pretty tired.
And Willie, you're on the field now. They're announcing the Hall of Famers. Talk about that, being on the field for a Super Bowl. You never played in the Super Bowl yourself. You're on the field. They announce you as a Hall of Famer. How did all that feel? Take us into that. How did all that feel?
Well, we were in the first of all, we were escorted through the way Indy set up. We were staying at the Westin Hotel, and from the Westin, you walk through the convention center and stuff over to Lucas Field, and we took a little shuttle. So everything is set up real close to downtown. So we're walking through. We take a shuttle to the stadium, and when we're walking across the street toward the stadium, you know, people are congratulating all of us. We're all walking together with our, you know, suits on, and people are recognizing that we're the Hall of Famers. And then we get over there, and they take us where a lot of the fans and people are sitting. They have like a section where they're having the NFL Experience, so you're sitting there hanging out. And I saw, I took a picture with Pat Riley and Cal Ripken Jr., and then I saw Strahan, and I saw General Petrus when I went to visit the troops in Iraq. He was over there, and Lenny Kravitz was performing. And from there, we went down to a little, like a green room, like a little room underneath, right by the field, and we stayed there till about 30 minutes before the coin toss, and then we went out on the field and, you know, got to see the guys warm up. I said hello to Brian Waters, and we were standing on the sideline and, you know, watching all the people in the stands, and I saw Jackie Slater and Denny Thune, my old general manager. He was a cap guy in Kansas City, and you're seeing all the people, and, you know, you're starting to get the feeling of how big it is. And to me, for a football game, I realize that people on the sidelines, well, you have the teams, but it's so many people standing around down there that it's very crowded. And you know, I guess during the game, some of the people might leave, but, you know, for a football game, to me, it's just too many people standing around. It's a lot of people down there, man.
And I saw you obviously you shook some of the players' hands after the coin toss. Did you sense anything with those players? Did you sense, okay, oh, Eli's focused, or this guy's going to have a big game? Or did you sense any of that?
You know, watching them warm up, even in warm-ups, to me, New England just looked a little flat. I mean, it just, you know, New England did not look like they were excited. You know, to me, they looked flat in the warm-ups before the game. And
right.
I was closer to them. When we came out of the area we were in, we were on New England sideline before the game and over there. And to me, watching Tom Brady's mannerisms, watching the Patriots, they did look a little flat to me.
And you watched the whole game from the sidelines?
No. We did the coin toss, and we stood down there and watched the opening kickoff. And after opening the kickoff, we went up to a suite.
Okay, okay. And I want to move to halftime now. You have the great Madonna performing, doing her thing. I enjoyed the halftime show. I thought Madonna laid it down during the halftime. How did you feel about the halftime show?
I thought she did an excellent job. I think she did a good job because she incorporated, you know, Nicki Minaj and CeeLo and M.I.A. I think the way she incorporated got the younger audience involved with the younger musicians and CeeLo, who's a hot musician right now on the show, that show he's on the plug or whatever. I think she did a good job with mixing it up like that. And then she brought the England audience in with M.I.A. and she's real big over there. So I think she did. I thought the show was real good.
Did you watch the whole show from the suite?
Yeah, I sat up in the suite, watched the show. And a lot of guys around the third quarter, most of the guys, they didn't finish the game. They started going back. I stayed. I mean, me and my father stayed, but most of the guys decided to go back to the hotel around the third quarter.
And I want to ask, going back now to when you finally heard the announcement and everything, who was the first person you talked to after you heard that you were going to be enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
I talked to some friends of mine, they called my phone. My phone was ringing, and I talked to them, and they congratulated me. And, I just had so many texts and so much going on, from that time period that I just had to put the phone down and in my pocket and just get to the airport. So I just remember talking to some high school, college teammates, and they would congratulate me. And then, I did a reporter call, and I talked to them also during the time period.
We're talking to the newest enshrinee into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Willie Ruff. Go ahead, Jeremy.
I guess I'm always a cynic, and I know I'm sure when you got drafted into the NFL, everyone comes out of the woodwork, and probably each contract that gets restructured, everyone comes out of the woodwork. So who comes out of the woodwork here that you probably didn't hear from in a while that you said, man, I didn't think I was going to hear from them?
Well,
I hope it wasn't a woman.
Well, yeah, I had a few emails from some women, some girls that I hadn't talked to, and they were saying, how you doing, congratulations, trying to catch up. Obviously, you had some texts and messages from some people, some friends that I hadn't heard from in a while. But, yeah, I had a few emails from some girls that I hadn't even talked to in a couple of years. So, that was a little bit surprising, but it's not really surprising. But, yeah, I did have a few emails from some people that, they don't even have my number, and I don't have the number anymore.
And Willie, I saw you on the field. You had, a black suit jacket with Saints colors. You had a gold shirt. What was the thinking behind that? Was it the Saints colors? What was the thinking behind that outfit during Super Bowl?
After the game was over with, after the coin toss, I wanted to be comfortable. So I had a tan cashmere V-neck on with the black suit, and it was the theme was the black and the gold for the Saints color. But I didn't want to have a tie on and all that for the rest of the game. So after I did the coin toss, I pretty much took the coat off and just had on the cashmere sweater with the slacks. So I was pretty comfortable.
Maybe you could have went with a tie and a shirt at that time and then change afterwards. You want to do that?
What?
You go with the suit and tie, then afterwards you could have changed into something more comfortable.
Well, no, that's my style. I'm not really a suit and tie guy, so I decided, Paul, I had on the sports coat, Paul, and I had on a cashmere sweater. I wasn't dressed to go to church.
You are the NFL Hall of Famer now. Why are you letting this? Why? Just don't move on. Take a month off, Willie.
Looking at it now, I've heard you say in other interviews that you think that the Hall of Fame process should be changed a little bit. You got guys like Chris Carter, Tim Brown, Andre Reed on the outside looking in at this point. Ultimately, those guys will eventually get in. But you think the process should be changed up a little bit. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, it's just one of my opinions that if you have the same writers and it's the same people that are voting every year, obviously we're having some issues with you know, the receivers are splitting up the vote. I mean, it's like the Republican primary, the caucus, you know, they're splitting up the vote and it's messing it up. And I think one of the writers, my agent sent me something saying that one of the writers said that that's kind of what happened last year with me partially not getting in last year. It was nothing against me not being valid, you know, maybe getting in last year. It's just that some of the voting was being split up, and I think when you have those three receivers on the ballot, so and you have guys that are from the Northeast region of the country, then you have Chris Carter from more of the Midwest, then you have Tim Brown that's from the West Coast, you know, and played at Notre Dame, then you have different writers, and maybe those writers follow their receiver in their area more than the other, so they're not voting, you know, so it's kind of a tough situation. And just like what I told you guys before, you know, me retiring the year before Will, then you have Jonathan Ogden and Larry Allen coming on the ballot next year. So, you know, does Will get in next year with those other two linemen on there? You know, I don't think they're going to put three offensive linemen in. So I think this was a – The way it worked out with this class, I think the writers went in and wanted to put some offense and defensive linemen in, and that's what happened. And obviously, you know, Curtis Martin, they thought more highly to put him in over his career accolades than they did of Jerome Bettis.
Right, and I was surprised that Dolman got in over Charles Haley, but I'm not surprised because – and this is not a knock on Chris Dolman. Chris Dolman is a Hall of Famer and a legitimate Hall of Famer. But I thought Charles Haley, a guy who won 5 Super Bowl titles, 100 sacks, I mean, he was an integral part of those Super Bowls. And I'm not surprised that he didn't get in because of some of the things and some of the way he has treated the writers and reporters over the years. So from that standpoint, I'm not surprised. But I think at some point the guy deserves to be a Hall of Famer. And I think he will be a Hall of Famer at some point. But the guy, you look at it now, I was reading an article about him where he's bipolar. And he wasn't diagnosed as bipolar until after his career. So you look at that, and I mean, it is what it is, but I thought that Haley is a guy who's a legitimate Hall of Famer. And all those guys who didn't make it, for the most part, are legitimate Hall of Famers, but I thought Haley should have got in.
And Haley's been doing – I was with Haley at the draft, and, you know, he's very – he's a different guy now. You know, he's matured a lot. You know, he carries himself, you know, in a real good light. And I think he's trying to show up at the draft and doing different stuff so people have a better perception of him. You know, he was – you know, a little rough around the edges when he played, and he could rub you the wrong way. And you're right. You know, a lot of that stuff can carry over, and people don't forget. It's just like if you see different people and you sign an autograph for them, and they'll tell you a story about somebody that maybe was rude or didn't sign autographs and stuff. And I'm telling you, you know, people do not forget about those type of things. When you get in a position where we are and moving forward, you know, the way you treat people and the perception they have is gonna go with you a long way in your life. And like I said, if you do stuff negatively towards some people, you know, that will carry with you.
And you played against Charles Haley. How tough was he to block?
Very, very tough. You know, very explosive. He had that first step. You know, and he could change directions. He was a real good athlete. He could change directions. He was trying to get the edge. He was more of an edge guy than trying to bull rush. I mean, he wasn't trying to bull rush me. He was trying to run around me. But I played him on Monday Night Football in 94 when he was with the Cowboys. And that I played, you know, most time in the Pro Bowl, we were playing with each other. I don't remember playing him that much after that, other than the time we played him, you know, earlier in my career.
Well, I mean, if you don't mind, when you look at, and you're saying the voting, though, well, in terms of changing this, but how not just realistic, to me, aren't you almost saying then that they will have to almost go back and look at eons and eons of other players who are in a similar situation? It's such a commercial. I will say the one thing about the NFL, and this is in the last, definitely the last decade, it's such a commercial league now that even to me, the Hall of Fame has become a big revenue generator for the NFL.
I agree with you. And, I mean, you know, with the, I think one of those receivers gets in next year, maybe two of them. But, you know, like you said, if I do you change up the writers? What do? I mean, if you got the same guys voting, the writers from the big markets of 44 guys from around the country that are coming together every year during this voting process. So, I mean, what do? Do you change up the writers? Do you mix it up? I mean, if you, that's the only thing I can say is, excuse me, you're going to want to get some experienced writers in there if you do change up the writers, but do you want to get a whole new viewpoint, or do the writers have to really, you know, sit down and think about the guys and do more analysis? I mean, everybody's going to do the arguments for the guys, so I wouldn't be surprised if two receivers got in next year.
I mean, I think to your point, I mean, I think also, I think a lot of it in terms of these reporters, I think a lot of it is gets catty and guys hold grudges, you know, and if you do switch it up, to your point, if you're switching it up, I think you can have less of that and guys are going to be able to get in because they deserve to get in, not because, you know, the guys are not getting in because, you know, I have a beef with this particular guy or that particular guy. And to your point, if they do switch it up, different writers and whatnot, I think that would kind of erase, or not erase, but limit some of that, limit some of the cattiness.
And a lot of people say that about Chris Carter, that he, you know, he rubbed people the wrong way when he played. So, you know, like you said, I mean, those are the two guys that we're saying that they could be in the Hall of Fame right now, or Charles Haley and Chris Carter, and both of those guys, you know, are supposedly been rude or whatever to reporters during the time they were playing. And, you know, I think ultimately that could factor in the fact that they haven't gotten voted in.
And it's not a slight. It's not a slight on Richard Dent, but I thought Charles Haley should have got in over Richard Dent last year. I mean, it's not a slight on Richard Dent, but I just think Charles Haley, 5 Super Bowl titles. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that, and I think he deserves to get in. Ultimately, he will get in. It's just a matter of when he gets in, but he will get in. And looking at it now, Willie, I mean, you don't have to make your Hall of Fame acceptance speech until August, but at this point, do you have anybody in mind to present you, or have you figured that out at this point, who's going to present you?
Well, I've already said my father would present me. I mean, he drove to pretty much every home pro game I had, either in New Orleans or Kansas City, which was about an 8-hour drive, and he came up there with me. So, and his birthday was yesterday. He turned 71.
Happy
so,
birthday, Mr. Rove.
Yeah, Mr. Rove, ex-Michigan State Spartan. So I think, you know, it would only be fitting for the way he supported me and, you know, came to every home game that he would present me into the Hall.
And you got to start at some point thinking about how you're going to – your speech. You got to craft a nice little speech. I mean, obviously, August is a few months away, but any ideas at this point? I mean, have you been toying with anything at this point?
Well, no, I mean, obviously you want to thank people, but they don't want the whole thing to be about the thank you part of it. The thing is about this whole process, we met with the Hall of Fame people, and it's like planning a wedding. It's I have a big booklet downstairs, and I'm gonna have. They want me to come up there around February 15th. If I don't go, I'm gonna get somebody that I'm gonna hire to help me get this organized and planned, because I got to get a list of people I have to get all together, and I have an A, B, and C form to give people the A for your more immediate family, then the B list and the C list, and then they have to fill everything out and choose what events they want to go to and get their flight and travel arrangements. So for me to get the forms and do all this, I have to get all this stuff real organized and get it out, and then you can lay your tent out. Some guys like Jerry had leather couches in his tent, you know, had John Legend perform, or like Dion had Snoop Dogg and those guys perform when he got inducted at his party afterwards. So, you know, it can get very expensive. Or they said some guys made these big special invitations and put $50 in for each person for the invitation. It can get very, very elaborate. And some guys, you can spend, you know, not hardly any money, up to $700,000 on this event.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
Paul's advice. I was going to say, take Paul's advice. Save some money on that one. That's amazing. So you're not. There is no NFL contribution, kind of whatsoever. They don't stipend or you don't receive like any. I don't want to say assistance, but they don't sponsor. Like you don't.
No, some guys receive assistance from the team. From the team they go in under. They usually get assistance from the team. But no, the NFL has not, and that's what surprised me. All the guys that aren't there are on call. The NFL has nothing to do with this. This is the NFL Hall of Fame committee that takes care of the Hall of Fame ceremony and all this. They take care of this. This is separate from the NFL.
Okay. And at this point, you know, you talked about Dion had Snoop Dogg in his tent. I mean, what's the roof tent going to look like? I mean,
I plan on having some type of entertainment and having some type of music, whether it be a DJ or, you know, a little lot, you know, maybe a band, 80s band or a DJ. But I plan on having some type of music. And they do provide Jeremy the Pepsi products, and they provide alcohol till 1:30. I think when Michael Irvin went in the Hall of Fame, they stopped the bus shuttle service at 2:30, and Michael Irvin had it pushed back to like 3, you know, I mean, they stopped it at 1:30, 2 o'clock, and he pushed it back to like 2:30, 3 o'clock so he could keep the guys in there hanging out. So, you know, it's up to you how long you want it to go for, but they will help you provide the tent. Then you can make the tent out or lay it out the way you want to, and with chairs, couches, whatever you want. And if you want a bigger tent, you can ask for a bigger tent if you think you're going to have so many people. It matters how many people you have coming and how many people are coming and how elaborate you want it to be.
And Willie, I mean, I know at this point you haven't found a performer. I'm a guy on the side who likes to sing. And let me let you hear some of my work.
Say McNabb, everybody. Say McNabb, everybody. He is the guy. If the Eagles want to fly, everybody say McNabb.
What do you think? Can I get in the tent? Can I be the performer at the end of the tent?
You might be able to get in the tent. I'm not going to let you perform now.
You sure about that?
Yeah,
I'm sure
about that. But I would like for you to be there. But we'll let you leave your singing in Philly.
All right. And I'm gonna hold you to that. Maybe Jeremy and myself, we could take the whole team down.
Jeremy still owes me a steak dinner.
Well, Jeremy does owe you a steak dinner.
I'll tell you right now. I would tell you, not only will I provide a steak for you, I'll provide steaks for the guests. If I'm in the Hall of Fame tent, trust me, it'll be a wedding. It may even be a bar mitzvah.
Well, I plan on you guys being there, and you will get applications and everything like that, so you can fill out the forms. But I do plan on you guys being there. We're going to have a big celebration, and And, you know, I'm looking forward to it in August, but I do need to get somebody to help me get all this together because I know if it's up to me, I won't do it the right way. So I will get somebody to help me, whether the person will do some of this via email or getting all these applications out. And I will basically, what you do is you have different family members in different areas that can help you, you know, help you get your list together, you know, in different, so you can make sure you get the right applications out to people. And if people call and contact that might want to go, I'll make sure that I forward it, but I will need some help. They're going to fly me or whoever up there to Canton in February so you can go over the new facilities they're building right now. And, you know, they can help you, you know, they have people that can help you do your speech. They have people that help you through the whole process. So the Hall of Fame committee really does a great job, and they have about 10 people that are working with them doing different things, and this is a nonprofit organization.
Wow, so it's going to be a big old time, and I'm wondering the entertainment. Who is going to be the entertainment in the Rose Tent? I mean, you're talking DJ.
I'm more of a Steely Dan, more of a Depeche Mode. I'm more of a Bill Withers, Bobby Womack. I'm more than that, you know. George, I'm more than George Washington Jr. So I'm a little more of the old school type of music.
Okay.
I'm not into the, you know, into the modern day. It won't be no rapper. It won't be no rapper music in there.
And that's good. I mean, that's good. I mean, Bill Withers, A Little Lovely Day. That wouldn't be too bad, having him in your tent. I mean, so we'll see what happens. I mean, so it's definitely going to be an 80s type of band. Maybe Jodeci. They're a 90s band, but maybe Jodeci.
Well, I want them to be able to play a variety of music. So
okay.
A band that they can play of like some variety, and then go back to the 80s, you know, and play some of that. I mean, so I would like to hear some of that, you know, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be a few older people in there, so they probably would like that more than some music that they don't even know what it is anymore.
We're talking to Lewis and Shiny into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Willie Rofe. And Willie, I want to switch topics, and I want to move to the NBA, and I want to move to LeBron James. I mean, Kendrick Perkins came out on him talking about how he tweeted about Blake Griffin dunking over Kendrick Perkins and basically talking about how Kobe wouldn't do that. You don't see Michael Jordan doing that. And personally, I don't see anything wrong with what LeBron did. But LeBron James came out this week and says that everybody has been blaming everything on LeBron. Here's this quote. You could be watching cartoons with your kids and you don't like it, you say, blame it on LeBron. If you go to the grocery store and they don't have the milk that you like, you just say, it's LeBron's fault. And I agree with him on this level. I think a lot of people are blaming. We're just throwing a lot of darts at LeBron, and some of them are stupid. And I think this one by Perkins is kind of stupid as well. Well, what's your thoughts on it?
I mean, yeah, I understand he's a little upset, and those guys – you know, they get dunk on people every day in practice, but, you know, everybody, people are jumping on LeBron. LeBron has to figure things out, and I hope LeBron gets a ring because, you know, I'm tired of this, and everybody wants to analyze, ever since the decision, everybody wants to analyze everything that LeBron does, and I think LeBron has to step up in the postseason, and he has to step up in the finals, and he has to show that he has that killer instinct, because until he gets a ring, they're going to keep doing this. So, you know, it's kind of reminds me of when Shaquille O'Neal didn't have a ring, and when he was playing in Orlando, and then they said he was a rapper, and he was doing all his entertainment stuff, but he wasn't playing basketball. LeBron has to figure a way to step up in the finals and if they get back, and he has to figure out a way to get a ring to quiet all his critics down, because everybody can talk about how great a basketball player is, but until he gets a ring,
No, because I think you made a great point. I think that he, in the offseason, goes on ESPN and pretty much apologizes for the mistake and the way it played out and admits that he wished he would have done it better. But how much, and you know from your playing days in the NFL, how much player jealousy is out there for LeBron?
Now, what did you say, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, it just seems like I don't like this word, it's a teeny bopper word, but it is. It just seems to be haters. They're just, for some reason, like you said, if he went, once he wins the championship, which He'll win one. It's inevitable. A player of his magnitude is going to win a
team. I hope he wins
one. That's what he needs because, it, like Paul said, this is almost they're attacking a guy for, you know, for living because – and I think he's right to come out and say stuff like this because I think it will polarize him more along the lines of a Charles Barkley than a guy like MJ because he does need to get people off his back.
Yeah, you know, he needs to – but LeBron has brought some of this on himself, too. LeBron likes to have a lot of fun. You know, some people will say he plays a little too much. And, you know, but the bottom line is, even in Cleveland, you know, I think he was worn down. But against Boston, in some of them games, he didn't show up, especially before he left town. Last year in the finals, I don't think Spoelstra's offensive sets. I think that was more an issue more than, you know, LeBron coming down the court just passing it to Dwayne Wade, extending to the side. There wasn't a lot of ball movement, and I didn't like the play call selections, especially late in games. When you got a big lead like they had against Dallas, and you give it up in those games, and then Dallas just took over the series, you know. What they were doing wasn't working, and Dallas took advantage of them. So LeBron has disappeared some in the finals. Now, last year against Boston, against Chicago, he was the MVP of the Eastern Conference Finals, and he played great against Boston and Chicago. But he didn't play great in the finals,
right.
and that's where you measured it. I mean, he's been to the finals, what, in Cleveland once, and he's been to the finals in Miami this past year. And when he was in Cleveland, obviously they couldn't guard Tony Parker. Tony Parker had a great series. But he's got to step up, Jeremy, and he's got to be accountable in the finals. So, you know, Dwayne Wade has to pick his spots. And what I said is it's matchups. So in some years it might be LeBron who has a better matchup that might get MVP of the series. In some years it might be Dwayne Wade who might be the closer against the series in the series. It matters who's got the hot hand. And Dwayne Wade has been hot lately, and LeBron carried the team. When Dwayne Wade was hurt for those games, LeBron and Chris Bosh, especially LeBron, was playing MVP of the league type basketball. And now Dwayne Wade's back out there, and he's been stepping it up. But LeBron has to figure a way to make the coach has to figure a way to make both of those guys be able to play at their peak performance come postseason basketball time.
Definitely. And to your point, you talked about the Celtics series. He had some awful body language in that series, especially that last game. His body language was awful, and then he had the decision show. And from there, it was bad. It was a bad time for him, and I think that's why. Because before the decision show, LeBron was loved. Everybody loved LeBron James. After the decision show and then the way he played also against the Celtics in that series and his body language, people started to go against him. It almost, I mean, in the series against the Celtics, it just seemed like something wasn't right with him. And it just, something wasn't right with LeBron James in that series. And it showed. It showed on the court. And I don't know what it was. I mean, I know around that time that whole Delonte West mom situation came out. But, you know, I don't know how true that is. But I'm just saying, he just wasn't right in that particular series. And also, obviously, the decision show was an awful, awful mistake. And also, to your point, Willie, throughout the course of the playoffs last year, he was the MVP in those playoffs all the way up to the NBA Finals. He was one of the reasons he was big in the Boston series and big in the Chicago series. He was the guy getting it done in the fourth quarter, but he wasn't getting it done. He didn't get it done in the fourth quarter against the Mavs, and a lot of people are turning against him, and everybody's blaming everything on LeBron. People losing their jobs, blaming it on LeBron. Girlfriend leaves him, blame it on LeBron. I mean, it's silly at this point. It really is silly.
And I agree with you, and I think, like you said, until he gets that monkey off his back, and the monkey is him winning the championship, just like Larry Bird came out and said, if you want to win, then you go with Kobe. If you want to have fun playing, then you go with LeBron. I mean, that's, you know, basically it'll be fun to play with LeBron, but when it comes down to winning, then we got to go with somebody else. You know, when an all-time great comes out and says that, then that's basically calling you out putting the challenge to you to get it done as far as help carry the team to win a championship. And if we can learn anything from watching basketball, you know, right now with this Jeremy Lin kid, for them to be 4-0 with this Jeremy Lin kid who's sleeping on his brother's couch, and then you got Stoudemire and you have Carmelo Anthony, who both combined are making, what, $100 million apiece, and they got a kid who barely has the contract and a 4-0. I think Lin's going to be good, and I know that it's only been 4 games. But that tells you chemistry and a lot of factors way more sometimes than it does who makes the most money. And Carmelo Anthony is not shooting well, has not played this good. He shouldn't be a starter in the All-Star game. You know, he doesn't make anybody around him better. In my eyes, he doesn't make players better. So, you know, I mean, so it has a lot to do with you making the teammates better around you and making the team better.
And you look at Jeremy Lin and the way he's playing, you're right. I mean, he's getting everybody involved, and he's not the fastest guy, but he finds a way to get into the lane. He's not the fastest. He's long for a point guard. He's 6'3", but he's long. And he finds a way to get into the lane, and he hits all his open shots. I mean, he's played well, and
nobody knew he had a jump shot like that until last night, Paul. We haven't seen him shoot threes to shoot a jump shot like that.
I mean, he shot well. I mean, the guy is shooting, what? I saw what?
58%.
58%, yeah. I mean, this is, he's putting, I mean, 38 points. I mean, 38 points. At some point, you got, it's not a fluke.
Against the Lakers.
Right,
here's the problem. No, Paul, I mean, stop. Listen. But one of the things is he's a pretty good player, but don't also forget the fact that I think the Lakers, they almost admitted that they were overlooking not only him, but the Knicks game. That's coming off of a big Boston game, which they played, I think, much better in. And
that was a back-to-back. You're right. That was a back-to-back.
The problem with this season, I think the biggest problem the NBA has with this type of season is they're asking way too much of players to be traveling and doing all this. Almost, it's like every other night, and they're playing, you know, 4 quarters of basketball. It's turning out to in my view, from a real fan perspective, it's ugly. The game looks horrible.
I gotta disagree with you on that one. I think the game is fine. I think the play we're getting is fine. And I don't have a problem with it. I think it's actually more compelling.
The Boston Lakers game was a playoff atmosphere game. That was an excellent game. Now, the guys are a little tired, Jeremy. I mean, they're going to play back-to-backs, and the Lakers were on a back-to-back. And you got Derek Fisher out there trying to guard him. Well, Derek Fisher is, you know, about 50 years old in basketball terms, and he can't guard that kid. So, you know, they tried to put bones on him, but Derek Fisher can't guard him.
But that's what I'm – I mean, I think this whole – the whole Lakers talk is just ridiculous. They are not a good team this year, period. They are old. I mean, unless they start to funnel this team through Bynum, you know, and change the – it's kind of passing of the guard, which I don't think Kobe could do because he took – remember, he took it from Shaq, and now he has to kind of give it back to the center.
I got to stop you on there. You cannot tell me at this stage that Bynum is ready to be the number one guy. This is still Kobe's team. The problem with the Lakers I see is Gasol is a guy who's not getting a lot of touches around the basket.
Gasol's playing good basketball right now.
His shots are jump shots. He's shooting a lot of jump shots.
He's playing good ball right now.
And you got to get the ball to him inside. Now, I think also you look at it, you look at Kobe – you look at the team, they're missing Lamar Odom. He was big. He was big for this ball club. He was very big.
Huge off the bench. Jeremy, Lamar, that's 14 points they had coming off the bench. Yeah. They have the worst bench in the league now. They have the worst bench scoring in the Lakers league. And this is the worst, since the merger, this is the worst Lakers scoring team since the merger that they've had.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to question. Should they walk? Obviously, the fundamental players in this system, including Gasol, they really kind of bought into that triangle offense. And now under Mike Brown, not that he's a good coach, but this is it. It just seems like this whole all the players, including Kobe the most, they don't really seem to be meshing well in any of this.
And we'll see what happens, and we got to let Willie go as we're running out of time here. But I look at this NBA season real quickly as if you can get to the playoffs, you have a shot. Simple fact is, last time we had the NBA lockout back in 1999, the New York Knicks, eighth seed, got to the NBA Finals, got hot at the right time. So I think it's one of those type of years where if you can get to the playoffs, you have a shot. Willie, it was a pleasure talking to you, sir. Pleasure having you. Congratulations on all this stuff, and thanks for joining us.
And thank you. And if you can stay healthy when you get to the playoffs, if your team is healthy, then you have a good shot. You look at the Clippers took a big hit when they lost Chauncey Billups. So, you know, with the torn Achilles, you know, like Jeremy said, if it was a regular deal, would he have torn his Achilles? I mean, a lot of these guys' bodies are very tired. So look at Derrick Rose right now having back issues. So it's gonna be survival of the fittest and who can get to the playoffs and make that run.
And definitely, we'll see what happens as the NBA season progresses. Willie, appreciate it. Again, congratulations. You earned it, and it was a pleasure having you.
Thank you. And we'll have a big party in August. I'm going to have somebody up there singing good so Paul don't have to do those duties.
All right, it's fine. And I'll be there, and I'll look forward to being in the tent.
All right, dear.
Willie Rowe, 11-time Pro Bowler, the newest enshrinee into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We want to thank Willie Rolfe, and we also want to thank Brad Smith of the Buffalo Bills. You can listen to this show and other great shows at blogtalkradio.com/pgame, where you can listen to this show and other great shows. Also, follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGame. For everybody here at GoForIt, Jeremy Espy, and everybody here at GoForIt, we wish you nothing but the best of luck throughout the course of your week, and we see you back here next Saturday, 1 o'clock Eastern Time. Join us here. We bring it. We talk sports. We have fun doing it. Have a great week. See you later. Bye.